Walt Whitman is perhaps America's most innovative and most influential poet. Although he belonged to another age, we have a recording of his voice made in the late 19th century. This is Walt Whitman reading from his poem, America.
America, center of equal daughters, equal sons, all alike and dear, grown, ungrown, young or old. Strong, ample, fair, enduring, capable, rich, perennial with the earth, with freedom, law, and love.
Walt Whitman is the muse for Michael Cunningham's novel Specimen Days. Cunningham even borrowed the title from Whitman's 1882 autobiography.
Walt Whitman sort of snuck into this book. I hadn't intended to write my follow-up novel about Virginia Woolf with one concerning Walt Whitman, but it's a story in three parts, the first of which is a ghost story set in New York about 150 years ago, when New York was an incredibly difficult, polluted place where most of the population worked 6 or 7 day weeks, 12 to 14 hours a day. No garbage pickup. If a horse died in front of your building, the horse pretty much stayed there and you just walked around it. And I was aware as I was doing my research that through all this racket and mess and dust and dirt strode our great transcendental poet, our whirling dervish, Walt Whitman, saying essentially, it's all beautiful. It's all fantastic. We just need to find a more intelligent, inclusive, exultant way of looking at it. And so I felt like I had to put him in for contrast. And then once he was in one of the stories, it seemed that he had to be in all three.
The thing is, though, reading your use of Whitman in Specimen Days, your novel, your Specimen Days, you've woven his lines into the dialogue in each of these three stories.
Yes.
And the thing that struck me as I was looking at them was how often it actually could have been the character saying those lines. There's something about the language that Whitman uses that is distinctly his, but could as easily be spoken by anybody.
Each of the three stories involves someone who is in some way literally inhabited by Whitman and speaks sporadically in his own voice and Whitman's. Though he's quoting Whitman, he is also speaking very much from his own heart.
Well, tell me how you took Whitman, and you have him mostly, of course, through the things that he wrote. How do you take Whitman and work him into the story? How do you take his language? How do you choose what parts of it to work into the story that you want to tell?
One of the beauties of Leaves of Grass, which is really the one poem Whitman wrote, though a gigantic poem, which he wrote over and over and over again in slightly different forms, is that you can dip into it almost at random and find the perfect lines. It was amazing, really. I would open Leaves of Grass, which I do not know by heart, and look around, and usually within 5 to 10 minutes, I had found a line that perfectly suited the situation in which the characters found themselves.
There's one line that you've used in at least two of the stories, and I think in all three. A child said, "What is the grass?"
Yeah. That's one of my favorites. A child said, "What is the grass?" I said to the child, "Oh, I see no memory at all. But what could I say to the child? I did not know any more than he." That profession of shared wonder and the admission of not knowing felt absolutely crucial to what I was trying to do with the book.
And it's essential to understanding each of the characters in the book that they're dealing with that unanswerable question.
Yeah, as so many of us are. They're looking for some kind of meaning. They're looking for some kind of peace and happiness. And it's notoriously difficult to find. And great poets are a great help to us, I think, in those searches.
In the first story, when the child, the deformed child, Lucas, is seeing animated machines, I suppose, looking for people in the machines, is Whitman saying, do you think, that in fact there are people there? Is that what is the grass, what is the machine? Is that the same question?
No, I think that is the child's misinterpretation of Whitman. I don't think Whitman believed that machines were animate or inhabited by the ghosts of the dead. That is this little boy's sort of crazy take on what Whitman is saying. One of the things that felt important to me about using the work of Walt Whitman in this book was to acknowledge that, like any powerful and important entity, it can be used in a variety of ways, just like splitting the atom has been used in a variety of ways, not all of them good.
Well, you've done three things with it in this, in the stories that you've described. In the first, Whitman's poetry spouts almost unwilling from Lucas's mouth, but the poetry drives him, I guess you're saying, in the wrong way. In the third of the stories, it's the poetry chip in the android that offers him some hope of the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. In the third story, the android's creator, in order to try to give these artificial beings a moral sense that will be useful to them in situations their creator couldn't possibly foresee, he has programmed, well, each of them with the entire oeuvre of a great poet, and our particular hero has been programmed with Whitman.
But it's that question of what poetry does to you that that is at the root of this. And Whitman, again, you've chosen a great poet, but it's a poet who has been maligned through American history. There are schools that still don't want kids especially to read Whitman. And here you're saying he's the savior of the world.
I think any work of art that doesn't feel dangerous to a certain segment of the population probably isn't really a great work of art.
So there's no question in your mind that Whitman is at least in part appealing because of the danger.
Yeah. I think anything powerful and true is going to cause trouble in the world, and Whitman is no exception. There are going to be people who will ban the great books in part because there's something in there that scares them.
In writing this, did you have to fight Whitman at all? Did he try to take over your story?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I just gave myself over to Whitman. I wouldn't try to fight Whitman. I'm no match for Whitman. I just sort of tried to float the stories along the vast river of Whitman.
You said you allowed him in. You allowed him to take over. You had pretty clearly an idea of where the story was going to go. Did he take it places you didn't expect?
Yes, which is what you always hope for in a novel, whether or not the novel in question happens to include Walt Whitman. What I most hope when I'm writing a novel is that it will surprise me, that it will defeat my expectations, turn out not to be the book I thought I was writing, but some other book entirely. That is the sign to me that a book has taken on its own life when it upsets the silly little idea that drew you into it in the first place.
Do you worry now? You allowed Virginia Woolf to lead you on in The Hours. You've allowed Walt Whitman to lead you on in Specimen Days. Do you need another muse?
Well, I find it a good policy to worry about just about everything, just to be safe. No, I think at this point it was sort of chancy, but it was simply what I felt I needed to do to write a second book with a great literary figure at its center. I have no intention of writing still another one.
Michael Cunningham is the author of Specimen Days. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his novel The Hours. And this is Philip Glass with music from the film adaptation of The Hours,